This spring, follow your favorite baseball teams to Arizona for Cactus League spring training. Amazing weather and landscapes, exciting outdoor adventure, incredible food. Arizona is the perfect home base for baseball fans. 10 stadiums, 15 MLB teams, 75 degree temperatures. All 10 stadiums are in Greater Phoenix within 50 miles. Check out amazing restaurants and bars nearby. Enjoy live music from local and national artists. Hit the road and explore Arizona's urban centers, ghost towns, artsy communities, and quirky outposts. Check off must-see destinations from your bucket list like the Grand Canyon, Monument Valley, Horseshoe Bend, and Tucson. Bringing the kids along to spring training? Arizona is a fantastic destination for families. There's tons of stuff for kids to do and see, like wildlife parks, science museums, aquariums, and dude ranches. Plan your spring training getaway at visitarizona.com/springtraining. From San Francisco, California, with your host, Ben Kaspic, this is Locked On Giants Baseball. Welcome back to Locked On Giants Baseball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Kaspic, and I'm thrilled to be with you again today. On this show, we provide daily episodes Monday through Friday, approximately 15 minutes in length, talking about the San Francisco Giants in a way that's data-driven and rational, but also insightful and easily digestible, easy for everyone to understand. Coming up on today's show, I think we've been afforded the opportunity to weigh in a little bit on Brandon Belt, who made headlines yesterday because of some statements by his new manager, Gabe Kapler. And those statements were very much in support of Brandon Belt, who has been somewhat of a polarizing figure amongst Giants fans for years. So we'll review what Kapler said, and we'll talk about the response from Brandon Belt, a grateful Brandon Belt, for these statements. And then it will allow us to look a little bit closer at exactly why it is that Brandon Belt is underrated, and what is he good at, what is he not good at, and how does it all shake out, and how do we actually evaluate him? And it's pretty much like, depending on how you view baseball analysis, you might have a totally different opinion on Brandon Belt. And then I also want to talk today about Stephen Vogt expressing his thought on the direction of the Giants. And it's an interesting take, and I think fans respect Stephen Vogt and grew to love Stephen Vogt. So you won't want to miss what he had to say about Farhan Zaidi and the Giants' transformation. But first, getting to Belt. So this all started when Gabe Kapler had his session with reporters yesterday, and unprompted, he gave the following take on Brandon Belt. Quote, "I think Brandon Belt looks really good in the batter's box. He's kind of an assassin in there in that he's not passive at all. He's very aggressive, but if a pitch doesn't look like he can drive it, he's just laying off. When something hangs and he gets a good pitch to hit, he's really taking a good, healthy, aggressive pass. I just think we value his approach at the plate so much, and I think it's going to play very well for him in spring training, but ultimately in the season." Kapler is just clearly a fan of Brandon Belt. And, you know, I hate to kind of actually be perpetuating this story because it's not kind of a non-story. To be a fan of the offensive game of Brandon Belt shouldn't be controversial at all, because there's just no doubt that he was a well above average offensive player for the Giants for many seasons. Now, he's kind of taken a step back in the last couple of years, but I do want to just look back on what that contribution was like, why it is controversial to say that it was super productive, and then kind of give my opinion about how I evaluate Brandon Belt. So the fact is, by weighted runs created plus, 2019 was the first year of Brandon Belt's career that he was below league average offensively, and he came in at 1% below the league average offensive production. And weighted runs created plus, worth noting, is park adjusted. So in his best seasons, which were 2013, 2015, and 2016, he was in the neighborhood of 30 to even 40% above average offensively. Again, adjusted for the ballpark. And it's not it doesn't take a huge adjustment to make that case. Because, for example, in 2013, I'll give you the full slash line. He had a .289 batting average, but a .360 on base and .481 slugging. And those aren't even advanced metrics at all. We're talking on base and slugging. I mean, that should just be a part of anybody's vocabulary in today's day and age. But if you're just looking at batting average, home runs, and RBI, you're always going to be underwhelmed by Belt. 2015, the line was a 280 average, 356 on base, 478 slugging. And in 2016, it was a 275 average, a 394 on base. This is when his walk rate saw a big spike that year. So a 394 on base to go along with, again, a 474 slugging. So that's just premium offense, no matter how you slice it. So I'm going to give you the league average line in 2016, just for comparison's sake. So the non-pitcher league average batting average was 259. Belt's was 275. The non-pitcher league average on base percentage was 326 in 2016, and Belt's was 394. And the non-pitcher league average slugging percentage was 425, and Belt's was 474. And keep in mind, that non-pitcher league average encompasses a lot of players in a lot of ballparks that are much tougher places to hit than where Brandon Belt plays. So not only was he well above average in basically all three of those categories, but specifically and most dramatically in on-base percentage, which happens to be the most important of any of those three numbers. It's close to two times more important than slugging percentage, actually, which is why something like OPS is not a great... It's a good start because it's better than looking at batting average and home runs and RBIs. It's good to be thinking about on-base and slugging. But the way OPS works is you just simply mash those two numbers, on base and slugging, together to get one number. But that's a flawed way to do it because they don't have equal weight. It's actually more important to get on base than it is to slug, almost two times as important. And that's why we use something like weighted runs created plus, because it's properly weighting the different outcomes. So it's understanding and factoring in the true value of a walk, the true value of an out, the true value of a double or a homer. And then it's saying, okay, you did all this and you play in a pitcher-friendly park. Okay, here's the proper amount of credit to give you for that. So all told, we're talking about Belt having 30 to 40% above average seasons at his best. And then consistently, even when he wasn't doing that, he was coming in at around 15 to 20% above average offensively. And then combine that with the fact that he's been a top tier defensive first baseman for most of his career, and you're looking at a guy who was a very high quality player. Not a superstar by any means, but a very well above average player overall. Worth noting too that from 2011 when Belt debuted all the way through 2016, he was very competent against left-handed pitching as he was against right-handed pitching. 27% above average. And that doesn't just mean against lefties, like comparing him against lefties to other batters against lefties. It means comparing him against lefties to the overall average offensive production by everybody. So he was nearly 30% above average against lefties, and the same, 29% above average against righties. So he hit them equally well, and that was to say well above average against both. But what's interesting and perhaps concerning about the last three seasons is that Belt has actually become 15% below average against left-handed pitching in the last 3 years. However, against right-handed pitching, each of the last three seasons, he has been above average. The offensive production has been above the league average offensive output. Although in 2019, it was just 4% above the league average offensive line when adjusted for the ballpark. But in the last 3 years combined, still 18% above the league average offensive production. So that's all a mouthful, and we're going to have to continue this conversation in the second half. I want to get Brandon Belt's response to his manager praising him, basically. And it sounds like, you know, this is not something that Belt was used to under the old coaching staff necessarily, although he refused to throw anybody under the bus and say that he didn't have support. But it was clear at times that, you know, Bochy didn't appreciate Belt as much as Kapler seems to. Today on the Fantasy Minute, brought to you by League Commish, we're talking about Johnny Cueto. Cueto missed most of 2019 recovering from Tommy John surgery, but did end up making it back to the major leagues at the end of the 2019 season. He hasn't really had a very effective year in multiple years. A lot of people want to say that before he went down with the Tommy John in 2018, he was having an incredible season. But in fact, he had a strong ERA, but terrifyingly bad peripherals. His strikeout rate was plummeting. His velocity on all of his pitches was plummeting. So the 3.23 ERA in 53 innings in 2018 was a total mirage. And the year before that was not a very strong season either. So his last really strong year came in 2016. However, the elbow has been cleaned up and repaired. And so entering 2020, Cueto is expected to start the year healthy and be perhaps the ace of the Giants rotation. So given what he's done in the past, which is that he was a premium pitcher for multiple seasons, and the fact that he's another year removed from Tommy John surgery, it's definitely another buy low opportunity from a fantasy perspective. Just like we've talked about with Brandon Belt and Mike Yastrzemski and even Kevin Gausman, it's not someone you want to necessarily be taking early in drafts or spending a lot of money on in auctions. But, you know, as a late round guy or a low cost auction player, I think Johnny Cueto is certainly worth a look. So it's a low risk move that could pay big dividends if he can get back to being something like he was in the past. And that's your Fantasy Minute brought to you by League Commish for Thursday, February 20th. What are you doing for the game? A universal question. Whether the casual follower, the tweets everything, the beginner, the diehard, the stat nerd, the smack talker, the appetizer guy, the couldn't care less, or the makes everything into a competition person, we all have our place in the sports world. The same personalities apply to fantasy sports, and League Commish exists to ensure your fantasy sports experience is the best one for you. We match managers to leagues as we lay the foundation for your new league. It's as easy as sign up with your preferences, get matched, and approve of that match before any commitment on your end. Sign up with League Commish by February 29th and receive 15% off by entering the code LOCKEDON in the referred by section of the sign up form. The first 25 people to sign up using our code receive their first match free. What are you doing for the game? Find your next fantasy sports league at leaguecommish.com. All right, coming up in the second half of the show, I want to talk about Brandon Belt's response to this praise given by his new manager, Gabe Kapler. He says, quote, "It's something that I've always believed about myself. It's just now coming from somebody else. To say that it doesn't really affect me at all, honestly, I think I would be lying. I think it does. I put a lot of work and effort into honing my craft, and to see the organization I play for and my teammates appreciate that does mean something. I don't hold any resentment towards anybody else because they didn't share that with me the whole time. It's just something I had to know about myself. Whether other people liked it or not, I had to know that's what made me successful and I had to stick with it. There's a lot of baseball knowledge in this clubhouse coming from the coaches or whoever, but for me, I had to know my own limits and had to know what I did well. And that's what I knew that I did well, so I stuck with it. That's what made me a successful baseball player, and now it's just being more vocalized, I guess." And one more quote slipped in from Kapler here, which is that there have been times when he's been elite at the plate and hasn't gotten the credit he deserves for just how productive he's been from an all-around perspective. Power production doesn't have to come in the shape of 30 homers. It can come with extra base hits, and then obviously his ability to reach base and grind pitchers down is really what we're looking for from Brandon. So the quote there from Belt makes it very apparent that he just didn't have a lot of vocal support from the old regime, especially perhaps the coaching staff. I hate to speculate, but that's really what it sounds like. And he said, "I don't hold any resentment towards anybody else because they didn't share that with me the whole time." That just clearly makes it sound like nobody was there saying, "Hey, listen, Brandon, keep doing what you do well. It's really valuable for us." So finally, you know, there's some support for Brandon Belt. And it's interesting that, you know, there's within the media, especially, I think there was this skepticism about the new coaching staff and, you know, moving on from Bochy, not just the media, but the fans. They seem to think that it's some kind of perhaps damaging transition from Bochy to Kapler. But, you know, if you look at what's actually going on in the clubhouse, everything we've seen has kind of been the opposite story, and I don't really intend to throw Bochy under the bus here, but we have Tyler Beattie talking about how young players felt like they were walking on eggshells at times in the past, which I took to mean they just didn't feel supported. And then you have someone like Brandon Belt saying that no one ever really vocalized to him that they valued his approach at the plate, even when he was like performing at an elite level. These types of statements coming out of camp, to me, are very powerful. And it kind of just challenges the notion that, you know, Bruce Bochy and the old coaching staff were this perfect unit and that there was nothing wrong with how they operated things and that their style was immune from criticism. So I think we need to just accept that Bochy and his staff were the way they were and they had a lot of success many years ago, but that, you know, the game has changed and this is the direction that the sport is heading. And it's good that a player like Belt can finally be appreciated by his own team. Okay, so lastly, I want to turn to these statements by Stephen Vogt about Farhan Zaidi and the Giants. And this is courtesy of Mark Sanchez on KNBR.com. Vogt told KNBR that the Giants made him a great offer and that it was just a one-year deal and he understood why. It's because they have Posey and Bart coming. And so a two-year deal for Vogt would have really not made any sense for the Giants. And Vogt said as much, that the Giants made a great offer. They expressed an interest in bringing him back, and at the end of the day, it boiled down to being able to have the second year. That's what he said. And then talking about Farhan Zaidi and the Giants' future and the new coaching staff, he said, quote, "Gabe Kapler put together a great staff. I've been a Farhan believer from the beginning. We had some great conversations last year, and he's got a plan in place. It might take some time to come to fruition, but it's going to. He's going to succeed there." So I don't take those statements lightly either. I don't think he would just say that about anybody. To me, it's obvious that Farhan Zaidi is doing a very nice job. And Stephen Vogt was a part of that. I mean, he really contributed last year, came in on a minor league deal. And people probably scoffed at that signing at the time too, just like people want to scoff at minor league deals they've made this winter. But then they ended up loving Stephen Vogt. And the trade for Kevin Pillar, they ended up loving Kevin Pillar. So it's pretty funny when the guy who brings these players in gets criticized when he doesn't bring them back. But like, he's the one who brought them in the first place. So maybe just have a little faith and confidence that he might be able to bring in players that you like. I think there are plenty of players that fans are going to love who are new to the Giants in 2020. Like Wilmer Flores has a very strong chance of being an extreme fan favorite by the end of the year. And I think fans are going to like Yolmer Sanchez if he ends up making the team. Billy Hamilton is a very likable player. Pretty much everybody they've brought in has a reputation of being extremely likable. I'm just optimistic fans are going to come to like these players again and that, you know, we need to just settle down a little bit and not get so worked up about every little minor move that does or doesn't happen. Anyway, that is all the time we have for today. Tomorrow, we're going to be doing our weekly installment of the Giants mailbag. So I'll put the prompt on Twitter and please submit questions and we'll discuss them on tomorrow's show. To get this show every day, you need to hit that subscribe button if you haven't done so already. Once again, my name is Ben Caspick. You can follow me on Twitter at Ben Caspick. If you like this show, please consider rating it, leaving a review, and telling your friends and family to check us out. I cannot wait to be with you again tomorrow, and until then, we'll see you next time.